Hi, sir. Welcome to part two of the discussion.
Hi, Neha.
Yes, sir. So part two is more about the cricketing mind and developing an elite performance, something that sir excels in, and his insights will certainly leave us wanting for more. To give a recap of what we did in part one, we discussed largely about his early roots, his inclination to sports psychology, his newest venture, Discovery and Sports Lab, his understanding of the psychology of cricket, mental resistance, famous quotes by Aussies on the strength of the mind and his takeaways, the mindset of players in high-pressure matches, the role of superstitions and jersey numbers, the role of a sports psychologist on big tours, and the burnout factor in bio bubbles. It was certainly an enriching and exceptional discussion we had in part one, and we look forward to carry the momentum on to part two.
Absolutely, so do I.
Oh yes. Before that, I'd like to give you a preview of the topics for discussion coming ahead. We'll be discussing character, how to handle young talent, some very important aspects of sports psychology and concepts, the attitude and personality of players, a focus on mental well-being of players, some exceptional matches and his takeaways, and the psychology of batting and bowling, among a host of topics that will keep you hooked on. Now, this is a very heavy episode. And here's also hoping that you can take a lot away from Sir's exceptional insights. So let's get started.
Oh, yes, let us.
Yes, sir. So Rahul Dravid now becomes a wonderful example of strength and character. What are your thoughts, sir?
Absolutely. I mean, Rahul Dravid is one of the legends of the game for that reason. I mean, if you look at every single player who has done so much in their career, not only as a cricketer, but as a person, now as a coach, specifically for Rahul Dravid. But that goes for any of them. If you look at a Shane Warne, or an Anil Kumble, or a Ravi Shastri, or Sunil Gavaskar, or Sourav Ganguly, everyone, I mean, Sachin. I mean, there are so many names I can keep naming, but absolutely. And strength and character are, I would say that consistency is the hallmark of strength and character. And that is the thing which shows an individual player's strength and character most. And most of the players who achieve the legendary status in a game, in any sport, and especially in cricket, have that consistency in their performance, in their attitude, in their personality, across a career. And they learn and they develop as they grow along. And that is strength and character for me.
Yes, sir. I mean, Rahul Dravid is a perfect embodiment of strength and character. We've seen those legendary innings, and absolutely so. My next question to you would be, how do you think, you know, we can handle the young talent in our country? And what do you think are some of the pressures of playing international cricket, your glamorous IPL, and the psychological ramifications of the same? To give an example, we've seen how, you know, Unmukh Chand didn't make it big after the 2012 Under-19 World Cup. And a case in point, now we have Prithvi Shaw and his poor run and how people are criticizing him, which is just so unfortunate. And even the doping ban that happened to him. And how important is it even, you know, in grooming players like Shubman Gill, to just, you know, name a few?
Yes. I mean, I would first like to congratulate the BCCI for doing a fabulous job from the mid-2000s all the way up until now to really work with ICC to develop the Under-19 tournament, which is the World Cup. And also to develop talent in our own country, because we have a lot of talent coming through. And I believe that it overall, by and large, there's been pretty, pretty good work. I mean, if you look at Virat Kohli, also an Under-19 superstar, Dinesh Karthik, again, the consistency comes in many forms, and consistency comes from learning, as I said, developing as a player, as a person, going forward. And that attitude is very, very important to inculcate in young players. And the other bit in young players is what we call a challenge support matrix. So it's a perfect balance between how much do we want to challenge them, push them, really put them in those uncomfortable situations, and how much do we support them, how much do we stick with them when the things aren't going well. Because as a young player, you're learning, you're constantly learning, you're evaluating, you're modifying at times, not too much obviously, not the basics, but it's still modifying your approach, and you need to be supported through that learning phase. And you mentioned some players, and the main thing is there's always more players, and that's the thing, that's a fact in any sport. There's always someone looking to take your place if you don't perform. And for any young player, I would say, listening in, hopefully, if you're at the elite level and you feel, or at any level, if you've progressed a level up and you're playing above your level, age group, age-wise,
yes, sir.
And things don't go well at the beginning, just take a time to evaluate why it's not going well. Is it something that you need to change?
Hmm.
Is the levels of the demand of the level changing and forcing you to adapt? Then adapt and figure out things with your coach and open communication with your coach, with your captain, your teammates. Take sports psychology help if you want to take in different aspects of your game in terms of mental pressure and dealing with that and how to deal with that. And in terms of international cricketers, a lot of them have very successfully come back, taken the effort to play first-class cricket, whether it be in England or whether it be out here or whether it go to Australia. If you look at Virat Kohli, after the 2014 tour,
yes,
he went
versus England.
And he went to England. He took the time. He's probably one of the most technically accomplished batsmen in the world already. But he took the time, got familiar with the conditions, and then he came back. And he developed as a player. So it's all of those little things which add up. And challenge and support for coaches, challenge enough, support enough as well. And finding that right balance, I mean, that's what makes a good coach and a great coach different.
Yes, sir. I mean, even I think there's this player, Aryaman Birla, how he took a sabbatical from cricket because he wanted to reevaluate. That's a good step ahead, right, for him?
Necessarily shouldn't. I mean, of course, for him, I don't know him, so I can't comment whether it was good for him or bad for him.
Yes.
However, if you want, if you feel like you have to take a brief sabbatical from cricket, I'm from what I know of this case, it's competitive cricket. I mean, a brief sabbatical from competitive cricket. I'm sure he's training and all of that. And it's also about finding your love for the game, because all of a sudden, when you're 14 and you're playing under 17, you're with very different people. It doesn't appear like that because it's just 3 years, but under 17s are giving their board exams while you're in class 7. That's a massive gap. All your friends are not there anymore. And that's what makes cricket or any sport fun. So that little bit of pause, break, look at what makes the game fun, evaluate those things, and then pop back in. And most of the times, you're a better player for that.
Yes, sir. Well put. And on the same line, could you also talk about some, you know, performance-related psychological factors in high-pressure match situations, and also probably reflect on concepts like self-efficacy, concentration, emotional control, and success. Here, I think I'd like to bring the example of, you know, how Australia has won the World Cup, the ODI World Cup, 3 years in a row in 1999, 2003, 2007. I mean, look at the kind of consistency. And even with leadership, right? And I think when I talk about leadership, someone like Tim Payne in the recent scenario, the way he's been behaving, any takeaways, sir?
Well, Australia in the years of their most dominant years, you have to realize not only was their leadership structure good, but they built up to that. They spent their time building a team around people who were younger back then. So, Sehwag sort of mentored the next generation with Ponton, and then Ponton carried that over. If you look at the Matthew Haydens, the Andrew Simons, all of them were Ponton's mentored players. But then if you look at Glenn McGrath and Jason Gillespie, that was more of the Ponton senior batch, the Steve Waugh batch. And then you have the combination of Brett Lee coming in again. So it was a mix of old and new. And if you look at India's golden generation from 2006, 7, all the way up to 14 or so, that was a, you can again see that mix of the senior experience with the young talent who were also maturing very, very fast. So
yes,
it's that
sir.
Balance that you have to get. And as for leadership, I for one think that Tim Payne is a very good captain. And the very fact that after the last test match, he made a public statement apologizing and noting his mistakes is what makes him a good leader.
Yes.
Actually, it makes him a great leader because mistakes happen. It's about understanding that. And just the fact that he came out and said that this, this and this happened and it was a mistake. And I shouldn't have done that. And that's a hallmark of a good cricketer, someone who understands the spirit of the game,
and
also a good captain because he made a mistake, he's calling himself out on it.
That's true, sir. And would you also like to reflect on the concepts of self-efficacy, concentration and emotional control in like high-pressure match situations?
Well, self-efficacy is just your belief in your ability to perform. Like, I can do something. And of course, there's reasons for that. You train. But sometimes the situations are overwhelming. There's 20 runs to go, 4 balls left. It's a task.
Yeah.
Right? It's a task. But enough self-efficacy, enough self-confidence on that line would allow you to not be completely overwhelmed by the task, but rather go about planning your innings and getting that, no matter how you're playing. That's what makes the best finishes of the game. So, obviously, Mr. Singh Dhoni has to be mentioned in that. He's always very collected and cool because he's got that sense of assuredness, and he doesn't think too far about what will happen if he loses the match. He thinks one ball at a time and the scoreboard at a time, and then slowly chips away at that. Concentration, obviously, very easy to get distracted in a cricket match.
Yes,
very
sir.
Easy to get distracted in any sport. Or even within the sport, very easy to be forcefully distracted. Like we've done things like sledging. They're done to get the batsman distracted and make a mistake. And also sledging, as an example, is also linked to your emotional control. It's designed to push you off. It's designed to make you rash, irrational. And the, both of them sort of have a dual cleaning sort of going on. And in high-performance environments, you're playing against people. You're also playing with people. So it's about how you're communicating with your batting partner or with your bowling partner from the other end. Or you're communicating with your fielders, your captain. All of that plays a role together. I mean, it's very tempting, I would say. I think that concentration, that's the only thing we got to look at. Actually, no. It's not just concentration someone does when they're batting. It's also about how they're communicating. You can concentrate all you can on hitting little stuff for a straight drive, let's say. But if you don't look, see, communicate with your batting partner, higher chances of getting run out. So it's all about all of them working together rather than one specific thing
which
we look at the most important.
Sir, also on the line of emotional control, now we've seen how Virat Kohli is, you know, was branded as a brash player in his early years. And that was even criticized largely, right? Now, he has channeled that aggression, according to people, and the view has completely changed. Everyone is in awe of that kind of aggression. What are your thoughts in the same?
I mean, he's still a very aggressive player, and I love him for that. And most people love him for that. That's what makes him very stand out a lot. And I believe the idea is that when we say channeled, I think it's about picking and choosing times to apply. When you want to be aggressive in a match and when would you want to be aggressive in a different way. Now, Virat Kohli advancing down the pitch and hitting someone for a lofted cover drive 6 and being aggressive. But Virat Kohli knocking it to short leg and putting pressure on the fielder by running a quick 2, also being very aggressive.
Yes,
it's all about knowing what to call. I mean, overt aggression is different, and different forms of aggression is again different. Hence, that is the change, I would say. It's about applying the aggressor in a more, being the aggressor in a more subtle manner when needed, and being overt when needed as well.
Yes, absolutely. It's just a matter of perception. I mean, now Hardik Pandya, right? He came under the fire owing to some comments made in poor taste on a chat show. And he did not anticipate the repercussions of his comments, and his lack of understanding was also reflected. Now, my question to you, sir, is should BCCI actually, like, you know, invest in educating its players about etiquette, social skills, and, like, the psychological side of the game? Does psychoeducation then become very important?
Psychoeducation is a key part of any individual young athlete's game as well. Like, to develop it, to have an awareness of the various things. And, of course, we should be looking at putting in place some structures for them to be open about certain things, to learn about certain things, because technical and tactical training are very, very important parts of the game. But it's also about the mental side of the game, the social side of the game as well. And with the game being more and more commercialized, being televised around the world, all of the players do have an immense responsibility. And all the best playing happens, of course, when you think that it's still a gully cricket match. Maybe the SCG is a little bigger than your normal gully, but it's still a gully cricket match. That's when the best performance happens, sure. But we have to keep in mind some of the things, larger repercussions of what you're doing, because people look up to you, people watch you, people learn how to bat from you, how to bowl from you, how to behave from you. So there's obviously a pressure. That's an added pressure. 95% of the time, it's an added pressure. And it makes them perform great things. It also sometimes is too much to handle. And it's that.
Yes, sir. Well put. And moving to another line of thought, I mean, in all the cricket that you've seen for so long, this is one of, like, according to you, one of the most resilient displays of cricket ever seen. Okay, I'll just give a thought here, like the Dravid-Lakshman partnership in the 2001
yeah.
Kolkata test, where they were literally backed against the wall. And even the recent Sydney test, I just can't get over it, where Ashwin and Bihari just, like, they did everything possible to just grind it out there and stay. Your thoughts, sir?
Yes. I mean, the last Border Gavaskar Trophy tour, where I think it was the MCG. I think it was again the boxing. Yeah, it was the
boxing day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The MCG, and it was Pujara and Kohli. We just kept on batting all
yes.
day. And again, it's being resilient is fine, and it's very, very crucial at times. But again, it's about where you combine the mental with the tactical and the technical, right?
Yes.
I mean, for example, some commentators have said that Pujara should have scored faster when he stayed for 194 balls.
Intent.
That's been a resilient performance, but it wasn't. I'm not a cricket tactical expert, but perhaps the scoring rate could have moved along a little faster
in
the situations of the game, because the wickets were falling at the other end. There was no one to stand that guard with it. But then Hanuma Vihari and Ashwin staying at the crease, taking guard and saving the test match despite injuries to both of them. Application of resilience in the perfect way possible. From the technical side of things, they were astute. They didn't give away their wicket cheaply. From the tactical side of things, they had to stay because no one else was coming to bat after them.
Exactly.
Ravindra Jadeja was in the hospital, so there was no one coming.
Yeah.
So just them, after that, it's bowlers. That's not happening.
Hmm.
And then again, if you look at this test match, the one ongoing, you have your Washington Sundar and Sajid Thakur.
Yes, sir.
Also very resilient. They're both pretty much on their test debut.
Yes.
They called on to bat. They put out a 100-something run partnership. And they do so efficiently, quickly, putting in mind the tactical needs of the game, because they were trailing by about 200-something when they came in. And then they got it down to a very manageable portion.
Yes.
It's about combining all of those things. Another very resilient knock that I remember would be Mahela Jayawardene in the 2011 World Cup final.
Oh, yes. Highly underrated. Yes, sir.
Such a resilient lock. And I don't know if you remember, but Brian Lara's century against Australia to win the series for West Indies.
Okay.
He just kept batting, even though everyone else fell around him. And then it was 9 wickets. And it was Brian Lara playing 5 balls, taking a single of the last ball every single over for about 10-12 overs.
Wow.
And that's sort of an application, because the whole field was set not to take a single, because they don't want Lara on strike. They want the other guy. Just get one wicket, we're home.
But
no, he stayed in his own flamboyant fashion. And
yes, sir.
He saved the test for West Indies. They actually won.
Wow, okay. Those are some resilient displays. Also, sir, did you notice Rahane used the word character a lot after the draw, right? What do you think is your understanding of the same?
I mean, character is what you're made up of, which is very simple. And what you're made up of comes under the test most often in high-performance situations. And character is built. You know, no one is born with a great character. As a baby, you don't wear diapers having great character. It doesn't work that way. Character is born, it's built, it comes through experience. Most importantly, it also comes through failures. But learning from the failures is what contributes to character. And it's about accepting not only your strengths and uplifting them, but also understanding your weaknesses and working to get rid of them. It's about a balance of the two, which sort of helps you develop a character. And every player has a unique character. Sometimes it's confused with personality. It does have some overlap, but it's not exclusively so.
Yes, sir. I mean, experiences does, shape character a lot.
Absolutely.
Yeah, sir. And also, we've seen how before the fourth test, India's injury list is like unimaginable. And I mean, very disheartening to see as well. I'm
Oh,
as
yeah.
a sports psychologist, how do you think you would handle the situation with like your prime players injured? And could you reflect on their morale management as well?
Well, honestly, I've been in a similar position, not that many injured across the tour, but this is in football.
Okay.
And if I was in the Indian team as a sports psychologist, the sports physician and I would have a lot of late night sleeps because we would be in constant communication because it's
Yes.
not just about the physical injury, right? Abdi came back to play as well. It's
Yes.
also about making sure they're psychologically ready because the players have to be ready to commit 100%. Or else there's a chance of re-injuring themselves. So, for example, the biomechanics of the 6 foot 2 fast bowler has been developed so that they have to steam and run in as fast as they can for them to be as safest.
Okay.
Because if they sort of mess about with that, if they jump at a lower height or with a slightly lesser intensity, their body is not used to that. Their
Okay.
body is actually tuned to be as fast as intense as possible. There's a higher chance of re-injury over that as well. And also it's about other sides of the thing. For example, if there's a concussion, there's a specific neuropsychological test that you administer to check that it's not a post-concussive syndrome but can have long-term impacts and all of those things. And so the work would be partly 50% of the time would be with those who are injured and trying to rehab it back in time. And the other 50% of the time would be with the everyone else to see how the team is being rebuilt between two test matches, right? Because a winning formula all of a sudden had to be changed completely.
Yes, sir.
Ashwin, who is one of the standout wicket takers in the series, couldn't play anymore. Jadeja, who's been brilliant, couldn't play anymore. So you had to build a team again. How do you do that? There's frank disclosure, talking with everyone, getting everyone's opinions, buy-ins, and that's how you do that. So it's a lot of overtime work, to be honest.
Yes, sir. And on the same note, I mean, how do we get the public to understand, the seriousness of mental well-being in cricket?
I mean, it's very easy for us as a public to say someone didn't do well, right? And armchair commentary in general is very much easier, especially when you guys won't have walked into a stadium like that. And most people haven't been to a stadium or haven't been to the center of a stadium where most of the action happens.
Yes.
And it really sort of reconfigures your mind to see where you're playing cricket. It's very easy to say you should have pulled it a little more, gotten under the ball, Rohit Sharma. Otherwise, that's why it would have gone over mid-wickets
Yes,
more.
yes.
It's very easy to say that. But then the SCG, sorry, it was the Brisbane, right? Gabba. The Gabba at Brisbane
Gabba.
is one of the longest stadiums in the world near the next side boundary. It's massive. It's absolutely massive. You can say a lot of the things. And it's not like they're playing against people who are giving in. It's not like Australia don't want to win. They do absolutely want to win.
Yes,
That's
sir.
sport. And mistakes happen. In sport, mistakes happen. And mental well-being has to be protected, not only because it's nicer for the player and the team that way, but it's also much more conducive to long-term performance. It's much more helpful to maintain stability in performance. So Virendra Sehwag's attitude is one which I always love. So in an interview, he was saying once he, all of his life, he was just focused on getting to the Indian team, which is great, which is what most young athletes do. First, get to the Indian team. Don't think about scoring 5 centuries for India. First, you get into the Indian team.
Yes.
And then when things were going well initially, everything was well, and then the runs dried up a little. And then Sehwag said that, I always knew that I had the ability. Some days the runs come, some days it doesn't come.
Yes.
And the media and everyone were telling me to play different and all of those things. And he didn't want to do that because he knew that's what made him Virendra Sehwag. And he just knew that even if I don't get through and I get dropped from the team, I can go back to first class. I can once again rework my game and I'll come back. And he said that Sourav Ganguly gave him time to sort of get under the slump a little bit, work towards it. Because another thing you have to remember is that the public don't see what happens in the training phase.
Behind
You
the
don't
scenes,
see
yeah.
that. You don't see that. For an athlete who is, let's say on the paper, not scoring as many runs because they've had like unlucky edges and things like that, or not getting the wickets. If they're still putting in 200% effort on the field, if they're still rallying their teammates despite keeping the working hard environment on, if they're still committing 100% in the field, you don't see that as a TV cricket commentator, right? You don't see that as the public.
Yes.
But the coaches, the players, their teammates, the support staff like myself do see that.
Hmm.
And all of which contributes to what happens on the field. And sometimes things just don't go their our way.
Hmm.
And in sport, you have to accept that or else you never move on.
Yes, sir. Very well put. And I mean, how do you think, sir, injury rehabilitation goes on and the mental side of the cricketers?
Well, there's two types of injury, first of all.
Hmm.
The first kind is a chronic injury, which is long-term, longer-term. So things like ACL, tears, surgeries and things like that, those are long-term. And they are typically start off with high intensity and then they take longer time to rehabilitate.
Okay.
Then you have your acute injuries, which are shorter-term return to sport, but much more weirder and serious. So let's say a broken finger would be an example of an acute injury, whereas Hanuma Vihari's hamstring would be one of a similar example of a chronic injury,
which
will take about 3 months or so.
Hmm.
Now, both are impactful because injuries, just like they leave a bruise, they also leave a mental bruise, a psychological bruise.
Hmm.
And a chronic injury especially is very key to keep in mind that all of a sudden an athlete who can do a lot of things can't. Because they're restricted and then they have to adhere to very strict, and if I may say so, very boring rehabilitation programs. So a hamstring rehabilitation usually requires at the initial stage to walk a certain way with bars for hours on end. You can't walk a different way. And because your muscles need to work a certain way for them to grow stronger again. Only then, when you're in the gym, you can only do certain types of things and that's very restrictive. It's very easy to gain weight because you're not exerting as much of the effort that your body is used to, which is still, appetite is still the same, but your calorie doesn't, you don't need that much. Then your friends, all your cricket loving things, all of them are training, which you're not.
Yeah.
It's hard. And mentally speaking, it's not exclusively mental. It's psychosocial or psychobehavioral. So it's mental and behavior.
Yes.
So if you're feeling left out, as we know, no one likes that, right? Now imagine if you're an international cricketer or any cricketer and you can't play for 6 months because you broke your wrist. But everyone else is playing. All you can do is send congratulation messages after someone who took your place on the team scores 100 or things like that. I mean, even though you're great friends, you cannot play. So it's that impact which often goes unseen, which often is not overt.
Yes.
Because if you have a fracture, you can see the sling. You have a very, very threatened self-esteem where you're really, really conflicted about whether you will be able to play to that level again. People usually can't see that. The professionals can, sports psychologists can. And a lot of the time, athletes come to sports psychologists during the injury rehabilitation process.
Okay.
A doctor suggests them to go through with it. And then they continue their work even after because they see the benefits and how they can develop as players after the injury has rehabilitated even, and then after into the performance side of things as well.
Yes, sir. And on the same note, sir, would you like to elaborate on any additional topics that come under the domain of psychology of cricket but often goes unnoticed?
I think coach-athlete relationship is a big one. And coach-athlete relationship, I'm primarily talking about a younger athlete, about how the open lines of communication should be there between a coach, or the technical coach or coaches sometimes if you're an all-rounder, and the athlete. So about how they're learning, not learning, what they're doing well, what they're not doing well. And you have to give proper feedback and come to the level of the athlete to really unlock their talent and unlock their potential.
Yes.
And at the international level, it's not exactly a coach anymore. I mean, they call them coach, but I think it's an inappropriate term. Because international level cricketers don't exactly need coaching that much. They need man management, they need tactical management, but it's not teaching or coaching. So that relationship needs to be very strong and integrated within the team. Because the team needs to make decisions together sometimes. Sometimes leadership needs to make decisions on their own, and the unit as a whole needs to be built and optimum functioning in the high-pressure situations. So that is a very underrated thing which I see in cricket, because people think it's all about you and what you're batting. Not exactly. It's all about you and how you're bowling. Also not exactly. Because coaches see things and the athletes can't. For the very obvious reasons, the same things what psychologists can see when athletes can't. Because we look while they're doing the thing. So when they're finished doing the thing and they've missed a lot of the things, the coach can tell you, you're landing wrong. Or the side can tell you, you're responding to sledging in that way. You notice that. So, yeah.
Yes, sir. Well put. And so any famous literature on the psychology of cricket or sports psychology that you've read and would recommend to our listeners?
Well, honestly, it is like the book, Sachin Tendulkar's book, Playing It My Way. Great starting point. Listen to the interviews if you can from great cricketers. That's very good. There's a documentary by Nasir Hussain on cricket. It's, I think it's Sky. Sky is the one who's produced it. If you can get your hands on that, very good resource. And also, check out the Discovery blog. We often post stuff about a lot of cricket sports, including cricket. So that's at www.discoverysbl.com, and you can find our blog. And also, you're welcome to contribute to our blog as well if you think you have something interesting and you'd like to collaborate to have a mental side of the things as well.
Yes, so I hope our listeners did take note of that, because they are some very good resources you stated. Yes, sir. So now when we talk about the Australian cricket, right, they have a brand of cricket that is just so aggressive and it's like on your face, a lot of sledging. And your thoughts on the same, sir?
Well, that's just the culture of cricket over there, right? I mean, I don't see anything wrong with that, as long as it's done in the spirit of the game, which almost all of the time it is done. And this time around, the fans have been not so pleasant, but yes, not the cricket team or the cricket culture's fault per se, but that you have bad apples in every basket, right? Hence, the type of environment that they're used to, bouncy pitches, late swinging balls, fiery tall fast bowlers, it's just the way they are. And that's the way their cricket has been for about the last 30 years or so. And yeah, just like Indian cricket team is a celebration of diversity from different parts of the country, from different socioeconomic statuses of the country. And the English cricket team is all about the county and then the nation. The West Indies cricket team is about a celebration of society as a whole, because players come from everywhere. It's again, it's just a culture of a particular nation playing cricket. And it's something I would say which is unique to cricket, because in football only recently do you see a certain country playing a certain kind of football. But if you go to Australia, you can be very sure you're going to get a lot of the late single ones around your fourth stump and a couple of them angling in, hitting you on the jaw.
Yes, sir. And it all boils down to culture, and many people just take that for granted and they just want everything to be the same way how it is, you know.
Yes.
And sir, I'd also seen a couple of posts on your Instagram handle that spoke about the psychology of cricket, which largely delved into the psychology of batting and bowling. Could you just pick on any major concepts from there that our listeners can also reflect on?
Well, there's so many, first of all. I would say, as a rule of thumb, keep in mind that you're not only developing technically, tactically. That's the most obvious thing. You get coaching for that. You're working on that. Where to keep your head down, where to take on the back foot, all of those things, yes. How to put an outswinger out, all of those things. You also have to keep in mind physically and mentally, or psychologically. Because a 14-year-old and an 18-year-old have very different brains, have very different minds, have very different bodies. A 21-year-old and a 27-year-old have similar differences. So we have to keep that in mind as well when you're talking about a cricketer or developing as a cricketer. So that's a pro tip for all the youngsters out there who might be listening. The other thing is, don't be shy about asking for help. And that can be help from your parents. When you think cricket is being too much, or you think that they're putting a bit of pressure on you, have a frank conversation. If you think you're a coach and you need a specific kind of help from your coach, sit down, have that conversation. And it might seem very daunting for a 14-year-old to go up to your coach and say, I want to talk about this. Trust me, if you do it in a proper way, if you say that I want to talk because I want to learn, coaches usually love that as well. And also, take your help from your trainers, from the SNC side of things, strength and conditioning. And also take your help from your sports psychologists when they're there. And be a better player, all of them. Because when the going gets tough, all of four, the technical, the tactical, the physical, and the mental, together work to keep you performing, not anyone on their own.
Yes, sir, a very valid point. And yeah, after picking your brain for so long, I think this is like the last question I have. Yeah, so sir, what are your final thoughts to all our listeners and potential sports psychologists who just aspire to be like you? I mean, you're so inspirational. And like, what are your future aspirations too, sir? Like the road ahead?
Well, the road ahead is working on my assignment with my team right now. It's the Cricket Scotland Under-19s for the World Cup, ICC World Cup next year. We have our targets, we have our goals. We are working, despite COVID, to charge on and achieve that. And then it's all about finishing my doctorate and developing sports psychology in India as well. So if there's aspiring sports psychologists, get in touch with me and or get in touch with my company, Discovery Sport and Performance Lab. We not only help athletes, we also help interns. We also help with internships and students as well, because I've always been a great person who's given importance to developing education and research.
Yes,
so,
sir.
Head over to www.discoveryspl.com for anything. We will get back to you, because obviously I can't. There'll be an entire dedicated episode to sports psychology and how to be one, wouldn't it, Neha, if I go on there? So let's not do that. And, of course, spread the awareness that you've learned. Do the little steps. Talk to the people that you think who can help you. And if you need help, and if it's anything related to mental training or sports psychology, hit us up.
Yes, sir. Most certainly. And I will give a shout out every time you post something. So, you know, our potential audience who wants to be sports psychologist can get the right exposure.
Yes.
Yes, sir. On that.
Oh, and another pro tip. I'll just give one more pro tip and then I'll end. So all the youngsters out there.
Yes.
It might also seem very tempting to. There's a lot of stuff out there, right? There's YouTube, there's Google and all of that. And I'm saying this not only for mental training stuff, but for everything. When you're learning something off the internet, try to at least get someone who knows that area to sort of check the content or the things which you're trying to learn. Because there's a lot of fitness videos which in the short term may provide great, you know, six packs. So you're moving towards there over 2-3 months, but then which lead to musculoskeletal injuries, which are very, very serious in the longer term, in a year or so. You won't realize that till it's too late. Similarly, technical training, talk. You see a video, you think that you feel great, talk to your coach. And also, with regards to your mind and sports psychology, see something on the internet, something about self-talk or visualization. Sounds good. Always make sure you talk to a person. And that goes for even when you read the Discovery blog. Talk to a person, talk to one of our consultants before you go on applying them, because everyone's unique. You, my dear listener, is also unique. And don't be, you know, too excited to apply, which might lead to difficulty for you in the long run.
Yes, sir. I mean, thank you so much for that pro tip. I hope our listeners do keep that in mind. And on that note, thank you so much, sir, for taking time off your busy schedule. Yes, guys, he had a panel discussion and he's like very busy, but he still took time to share his thoughts with us. And I'm very sure you all have so much to take from what sir had to say. And,
Absolutely. A pleasure, Neha.
And sir, I'd also like to wish you all the best for all your upcoming ventures and with the Sports Lab. I hope it's a massive success. I mean, it is a success right now. And you just keep building on the momentum and help all of us.
I will as well. And congratulations, Neha, on the back foot. You guys have reached your 25th and 26th episode. And I'm sure a lot more. And I will be delighted to be back sometime in the future. Hopefully, next time will keep me a little less on the back foot and sometimes for some front foot shots as well.
Yes, sir. This was a great collaboration and would love to have you again. Thank you so much, sir. Cheers.
Thank you. Cheers. Be safe.
Thank you so much, listeners, for all the support you've been showering the podcast with on social media and for personally conveying your good wishes too. Please keep the support coming. Also, do check out @ Never on the Backfoot's official Instagram handle for all the fun trivia, quizzes, and a lot more curated just for you. Please share the podcast and stay tuned for more episodes. Cheers, goodbye for now. Stay safe and take care. Thank you.